This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Look at us. We're into January. The holidays have been forgotten. Back to school today. You know how it goes. Yeah, today. Today is officially back to school day in what? Just Gauteng. I can never understand why they have different holidays for different parts of the country. It makes no sense at all, right?
Why can't they start on a Monday like the rest of us?
Yeah, exactly.
Or just all together.
Right. I mean, it's this phasing in of different parts of the country, different times, different schools, and private schools and public schools, and there should be, like, this is the start of school day.
Oh, but those extra 2 days make a difference.
Yeah, but see, when you're grown up, though, which eventually kids become, apparently.
True.
You need to know exactly how the real world works. So when you ease in on a Wednesday, your boss one day is going to say, no, you'll be here last Thursday.
I think it's mostly to help parents, though, because they, you know, a lot of people would have got back from holiday over the weekend, maybe, and then they got those 2 days to just get the stationery and the school uniforms and all that horrible stuff that you have to do.
Those really expensive school uniforms.
Are they?
Well, we know there's the whole price colluding thing.
Yeah, we know about that from
everything
from
is expensive, though. So I tried to be a good uncle recently because my nephew's now going to, like, grade 00. I don't even know what double zero is.
He's tiny. What,
like,
is he, 4 or 5
ridiculous.
Years old?
Like, yeah, he's like 5. Yeah. And I had to, you know, bought him a few stuff. Stuff is expensive, yo. It's like ridiculous. Mm. Prit is now like 85 rand.
What? For Prit?
I shit you not.
How dare they?
It is ridiculous. A pencil case was like $60 for this little Spider-Man situation. It's a mess.
Oh.
I know. I now feel like I have ovaries lamenting about this, but it's true.
Graham says he loved yesterday, especially Sia back arguing with Ben. I love the heavage argument that they have. It's never going to get boring.
I do want to trademark that term.
Heavage, yeah. That's pretty good.
It's going to happen.
Carla says, morning, guys. Great to be back. Can you elaborate on Michael's flaxit from the show? He's going to produce now.
That's actually a very cool term.
Look, you know what? Flaxist, he's taken a little break. He wanted to go out and do things. He was unhappy about how he was starting to look and how he was starting to feel. And he's on a major self-improvement bend. So let him get this sorted out, and then he'll come and tell us himself. You know, towards the end of the month, he'll pop in here again. Apparently, he's hitting the gym twice a day.
Clapping the gym, but
yeah. He's got a plan. He's going to get his body in shape. Then he's going to get his mind right. He's got a whole lot of things he wants to do. So good for him. I mean, you know, if you consider how many people do these New Year's resolutions and then they don't do anything.
Do you still even bother with New Year's resolutions?
I've never really been a resolution kind of guy because I've always thought you've got to have a list of things that you want to do in that year.
Uh-huh.
So what I do is I've got 4 lists. One list is the people I really want to see this year, the people I really want to meet this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only 3 names. So I put down, you know, a friend that I really miss that I still want to connect with a little bit more. Then there'll be, you know, someone who inspires me. Someone could be someone who's written amazing books. It could be someone who tells great stories or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first list is people I want to meet. Second list is places I want to go. So I'll put down, for example, this year I've put down I want to go to Rome. I've never been to Rome. I'm desperate to go there.
Outside broadcast in Rome.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Yeah, but like he wants us there when he's doing his bucket
I know.
Listing.
He definitely thought of us, Ben.
It wouldn't be horrible. You guys think I hate you so much.
No, it's just that, like, I can imagine when it comes to travel, you being as particular as you are about day-to-day things.
Yeah.
And also, can you imagine traveling with Sia? You would take 3 hours to get anywhere.
I have traveled with Sia.
Yeah, I'm an obedient traveler.
No, Sia's actually very cool to travel with, and he's not difficult. He just carries enormous suitcases around.
Well, that's true.
His baggage is enormous. Sia has a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
But otherwise...
in more than one way.
Otherwise, he's very pleasant to be around. Then I put down a list of the things I want to buy this year, which are, you know, they're not necessarily expensive things. They're just things that have been on my list for a long time that you kind of, you put there. For example, this time,
I want to get one of those Mavic drones. So that's on the list. It's just like your own little fantasy list, right?
Yeah.
And if you get to it, you get to it. If you don't, you don't. That's mm-hmm. the point. It's not like resolutions. And, by the way, and the people I want to meet, I've put Obama. He just delivered the most beautiful speech.
Oh, yeah.
And I get a lot of shit from people who say, you know, why are you such a big Obama fanboy? And I do think even if he were if he weren't president, I would be a fan of his just because he does deliver the most beautiful speeches. He's got to be one of the greatest orators of our time.
Mm-hmm.
And to say one day to people, you lived at the time of Barack Obama, is a great thing.
True.
I do think it would, you know, people go on about, you know, Winston Churchill's speeches and all the rest. The guy had a speech impediment. And some of the times he slurred because he was so drunk. And he was a great speaker. He was a great writer. But Obama is probably the most accomplished orator. I can't think of anyone who comes close. I really can't. He just combines like an ability to evoke emotional response in people with a very astute intellectual political bent. And he's going to be, I don't think anyone can get better. You know, when he did those Yes We Can speeches in 2008 when he ran for the first time. I think it was 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah. He fired America up. Remember, this guy has got two terms in the White House. He's been a success by many accounts. A lot of people don't like Obama for whatever reason, and most of the time it's just irrational.
Do you still think there are people who don't like the Obamas now?
Yeah, yes. There are.
Yes.
My belly's here.
Yeah, oh, my God. Absolutely. You know, he's been called a traitor. He's been...
Even to this point.
Yeah, no. People decide from the beginning, from the get-go, that they don't like somebody, and then they stick to that.
Yeah.
And they find reasons to justify why they don't like someone.
But it's irrational because he really has not gone after anyone in particular. The guy has not enacted any laws that are so unconscionable and disgusting that they need to be repealed immediately. I mean, people go on about Obamacare. I read a story yesterday about some dude in America who was complaining about Obamacare and he wants to have it repealed. And then he found out he's on Obamacare. Well, you're like, okay, you genius. Anyway, he's just delivered the speech. So he's on my list of, sorry, Mubs, you've come in the middle of a long-winded explanation about what I want to do this year.
No, that's fine.
We're talking about resolutions and stuff. So I said places I want to go, things I want to do, people I want to meet, and things I want to buy. And the people I want to meet, one of them was Obama. And then, I told you one of my things on my list is just to swear less this year.
Yeah, that
I just want to use less foul language.
Why?
I just don't, you know, first of all, gives the people who don't like you, and we were just talking about Obama and the people who don't like him. Mm-hmm. There are just people who don't like you no matter what you do. But this just gives them another handle for me. So they could say, oh, that Gareth Cliff, he's just a potty mouth. I've heard this before from very, very stupid people. But I don't want to give them that ammo. Because to some people who aren't stupid, swearing is just a little offensive. I don't see any reason to be extra offensive to people who don't know me, or to give them a reason to hate me if they don't. If they do, too bad. I can't do anything about those people. But I'm not in the business of giving anybody free ammo. You know what I mean?
But this doesn't mean, like, in traffic, when someone cuts, mm-mm. you know, into your lane.
No, I'm talking on the show. Okay. I'm talking about in email correspondence. I'm talking about when I'm having conversations with people. I'm just trying to cut it out.
All right.
And I can. It's not like I don't have a vocabulary that, you know, goes above and beyond the four-letter words. But you know how people are. Some old ladies and very prissy people get hugely upset when you use words that they consider to be the bad words.
Oh.
And it's always irritated me, which is why I never had a problem with swearing before. But I just want to tone it down this year and see if it improves my life in some way. So those are my things. But back to Obama, he really... I know Lucas is trying to find the speech for us because he's just delivered it. And I read part of the text. And it's got lots of people very emotional. Some of it's that's also just as stupid as those people who hate him for no reason. You know, the people who are wailing a river of tears like Obama's died. That's unnecessary too. He's not dying. He's just going to stop being president, which is what should happen in a democracy. In fact, the most important thing a president can do is leave.
On top.
Well, just
leave. When your time is up, leave. You know, if someone could just tell Robert Mugabe, now, you know, you had enough time. Retire and enjoy your what little is left of your 90, however year old life you are. Just get out there and be with your family. Get out of office. What is wrong with these people who want to cling to power forever? So the greatest thing a president can do is to get out when his time is up. And he does, in this case, leave on a high, I believe. He leaves with an economy that's growing beautifully, unemployment that is at all-time lows, uninsured. Americans are at an all-time low. I think it's the best ever number in history in America for uninsured Americans in terms of how low it is. So if someone's house burns down or if they crash their car or something terrible happens, most Americans are insured. This is a big deal. Most South Africans are not. Some tragedy befalls most of us. Most people don't have basic insurance.
Shucks.
Yeah, so we've got to work on that. I like the guy. For what it's worth, I think he's been, you know, you could criticize the celebrity element of this. You could criticize the fact that he didn't maybe refer to race politics enough. He didn't do enough for the black communities. That's where he gets a lot of his heat from, believe it or not. You know, because they go like, he's our guy, and now he's in the office, so he must do stuff for us.
See, I don't get that.
He's
black.
No, but
how much more can you stand up for black people? You're black and you're in the White House.
See, some people are never satisfied.
They'll always find something. They'll always find something.
But I mean, the Trump supporters as well.
They're the worst.
I mean, they have some of the worst things to say about the Obamas, you know? Talking about how they can't wait to see their, you know, the back of their heads as they leave or whatever.
Right.
They're also like a group of people who have just never had anything to say about the Obamas.
Nothing nice.
Yeah.
Well, this is the guy singing the anthem. He's in Chicago, by the way.
His hometown.
Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, it's good to be home. He's just such an even-tempered guy. And here's the thing that I like the most about him. Contrast this dude, who is so together, who has an ability to control. He's had some very emotional experiences in his time in the Oval Office. You know, there have been shootings at schools. There have been ugly natural disasters. There have been wars. There have been all kinds of things. And he's kept his cool. He's like such an adult. Compare that with Meryl Streep is the most overrated actress because she criticized him. It's just, you know what I mean. We don't need to get into this. I'm tired of it in some ways. But we'll see if we can find from Obama's speech a little bit later on. Obviously, it's still happening in Chicago. And he's there with this amazing family of his. That's another reason I like the guy. He's a good father. Those two girls seem to be very well adjusted, very, very lovely people. You know, like Bush's daughters who were like drunk in the street most of the time. Don't get me wrong. I thought that was quite exciting. But they you know, these are the model family you've got going on there. You've got Michelle, who really some people say is the power behind the throne. This very strong woman who is able to also have made a contribution in important ways when it comes to things like nutrition and that kind of thing, and keeping people, because God damn it, Americans are fat. And no one's going to say it except her, because she can get away with it. She keeps herself in good shape. And she also is a very charismatic. All you want in a first lady is someone who can make people feel that there's something relatable between them and what's going on in the White House. And Michelle was good at that too. So there we go. That's the whole, that's the synopsis of kind of 8 years of Obama. And he looks at it in quite a lot of detail. It's, as I said, a 20-minute speech. So there's no way I can play the whole thing to you. We'll be here all day. But there's a lot going on over there. Today on the show, we're going to speak to Thulani Hadebe, who is, of course, a man about town, marketing guru. He's the managing director of public relations from brand ambassadors, and he's coming in because we have been talking quite a lot about celebs in the last 3 days and how they either annoy us or their influence is waning, and I thought it would be good to have someone whose business it is to talk about celebrity, to make money out of celebrity, to promote celebrity. This is what he does. He knows how to work the room. He knows how to host a party. And you'll be talking about him for years to come. So we thought we'd get Tools in here. He's a very cool dude. Knows what he's talking about. Later on, Jeremy Mansfield will pop by. Now, I haven't seen Mansfield in, 5 or 6 years, maybe even longer. We used to work together at Prime Media when he was doing the morning show on Highveld. It was the most successful morning show then in South Africa in terms of the amount of advertising revenue and the audiences it was pulling. And the guy really did a lot of very original, very cool stuff on air. And I always liked him. I don't think he liked me at the time. I mean, he was okay when I was on afternoons. Then we'd sit and we'd joke together and we'd have breakfast and all that kind of thing. So we got along. I mean, I was always the junior kind of to his experience. But something happened when we went to mornings and he just decided like I was, I was an enemy because I was on at the same time as him, which I'd do that. So I can't really complain about it. But it just he became a bit nasty sometimes and I didn't always love our interactions. And I thought the other day, because he sent me a message out of the blue, said, you know, congrats on the book and everything else. I thought, well, let's catch up with him. And then I put it on the back burner. And I read a story the other day about how Mansfield is going into politics. He's thinking of going into active politics and he wants to join the DA or something. So I thought we'd call him in here and talk about it. And he's coming in this morning at 8 o'clock. So there should be some interesting stuff there too. Today is the anniversary. I think it's today. It was either yesterday or today. David Bowie's death. So a lot of people talking about him. And
well, that seems a bit soon.
Yeah, a year already.
Yeah. Yeah, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I love the way in Obama's speech, the crowd started chanting, just to go back to that for a second, 4 more years. At the end of it. And he said, no, we can't do that. Which is, again, why, you know, he's a great president. He knows when to leave.
I would have loved to have seen a Trump versus Obama presidential race, though. Because Hillary was useless, let's be honest.
Well, that's the point. Obama won. Middle America loved Obama.
Yeah.
The guy won a lot more votes than Hillary ever did.
And the youth.
Yeah, young people were fired up.
Young people actually went out and voted for Obama, whereas for Hillary, not so much.
No, not so much.
Can you imagine what Trump would have come up with just to kind of try to discredit him?
Like, jeez, can you imagine?
It would have been so funny.
Can you spare a thought for Hillary right now? Can you think about how miserable she is about what's happened? She spent her life, she's dedicated her life with the ultimate goal of the presidency in her sights. You know, becoming the first female president or just becoming president. And now she has to watch Trump being sworn in.
Or The View, whatever she does most
days. But this is it. Like, she's finished, right? She's finished. There's nothing for her to do anymore.
Yeah, she's like Ronda Rousey'd.
Yeah. So what's she going to do? She's going to live in that house in Chappaqua. She's got to look at goddamn Bill all day, which has been painful enough for the last couple of years.
Because he's withering away.
I bet you those two don't even sleep in the same bedroom anymore. Like, they live separate lives, I think.
They don't even like each other. Are you kidding?
Shame.
Yeah, listen to this quickly. This is
you can tell that I'm you can tell that you can tell that I'm a lame duck because nobody's following instructions. Everybody have a seat.
Just trying to calm down.
My fellow Americans. Michelle and I have been so touched by all the well wishes that we've received over the past few weeks. But tonight it's my turn to say thanks. Whether we have seen eye to eye or rarely agreed at all, my conversations with you, the American people, in living rooms and in schools, at farms, on factory floors, at diners, and on distant military outposts. Those conversations are what have kept me honest,
and kept me inspired and kept me going. And every day I have learned from you. You made me a better president, and you made me a better man. So I first came to Chicago when I was in my early 20s, and I was still trying to figure out who I was, still searching for a purpose in my life. And it was the neighborhood.
Oh, I love those people who sit in the crowd and go,
they're catching the spirit.
No, but someone is on a, someone's on a mission. One woman. Actually, it's one person
Meryl
always.
Streep.
It's either a guy or a girl somewhere in the crowd and they need to scream out their bullshit. This guy, the president is talking. Shut up.
No,
can you save your comments for a YouTube comment section, you moron?
It's just like those people in church. They just caught the spirit. They've caught the Obama spirit.
What is wrong with these people that they feel they need to be heard by everyone? Shut up. This is Obama's moment. Don't scream your shit out. There's a reason you're not the president. There's a reason you were in the crowd with a thousand other people. Shut up and listen. You came up. This, I do not get this. I used to see it at Idols sometimes. You'd have a performer on the stage. People are there to see the performer.
Mm.
And then it's important for them to make their big hullabaloo so that they can get some attention for giving attention to the performer they're there to see. Shut up and enjoy the performance. Can you just keep your goddamn mouth shut? What is wrong with people? You've got the president of the United States talking here, but you must go, I just want to tell you, Obama, I love you. Shut up. He's busy addressing you. He's being serious, talking about things that matter. You're going to go back to your house and have some porridge.
On your Jesus, Obama people, China, though.
But people are so...
Pretty certain exactly. That's the time. They have an Obama cup, Obama
must make
picture
a noise.
In the lounge.
Must scream, must be heard. It's very important, the me in this moment. God, people are such narcissists.
Not far from here where I began working with church groups in the shadows of closed steel mills. It was on these streets where I witnessed the power of faith.
And by the way, he's keeping his cool, but this would drive me to drink. I would jump into that crowd and start punching someone.
Well, whoa.
At first I thought that might be a Trump supporter that slipped in and who was trying to disrupt proceedings.
And he's had that before.
Oh, he's had that plenty of times.
But that's why this doesn't make any sense to me. This is a rally, not even a rally. It's a farewell.
But how have the crowd not turned on her? Can you imagine you've taken time out of your life to go listen to Obama and then you got this woman next to you?
Screaming, screeching in your ear like a banshee, like a maniac.
And the quiet dignity of working people. And
the quiet dignity.
The irony.
Yeah. While she's busy screeching like a banshee.
Face of struggle and loss. I can't do that.
Look, I think it's
at
pretty,
this point, he's even going, oh my God, I'm glad to be getting out of this mess.
It's pretty obvious. They were shouting 4 more years, not for him to stay, but just shut that woman up.
That was their strategy.
Give her 4 more years in prison. Oh, people.
Not easy, huh?
No. All right, so there we go. There's a little snippet of what Obama's up to this morning. And of course, BuzzFeed's editors are all losing their minds. They're all crying. I just saw a bunch of tweets. They're like, oh, I'm never going to stop crying, but spelled C-R-I-N-G. This is the editor of an actual website. Oh, can I play you something that's pretty funny? I think you'll appreciate this. This is you know that guy, that one who screams and shouts when he's doing his YouTube videos?
Well, there are 1 in 10 Americans are now.
Yeah.
I want you to hear this because it's about depression.
Okay.
And we've got a couple of minutes before we get to news. He's just talking about how many Americans are on antidepressants and how we fetishized being depressed. Like people wear it as a badge of honor. They think it's an interesting character trait.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they're, by the way, I want to preface this by saying I don't necessarily agree with any of this, but it's an interesting point of view. So I was listening to him yesterday afternoon and one of the many things that I listen to almost weekly
One in 10 Americans are now on antidepressants. One in 4 women in their 40s and 50s are on antidepressants. The rate of antidepressant use has increased 400% over the last 2 decades. Blue Monday.
That's incredible.
Blue Monday, the third week of January, is the most depressing day of the year for people living in the Northern Hemisphere. The weather sucks.
Did you know that?
I remember hearing something like that.
Yeah, this is why. The weather sucks.
You're not getting enough sunlight, causing seasonal affective disorder. You're in the most debt, you're more likely to be sick. Christmas is just a memory, and your New Year's resolutions are already failing. So you're more prone to depression than at any other time of the year. But wait. Those factors have always been in play. None of this explains why depression has become so commonplace in modern society. Well, I'll tell you why. We're bathed in a culture that glorifies and fetishizes depression.
Do you agree with that? I mean, that makes a fair amount of sense to me. I've met so many people who say to me, oh, I'm depressed, I'm on medication. And some people have, you know, very good reasons to be depressed, and it's not my place to be their psychologist or their psychiatrist. But I do meet a lot of people whose lives are actually just boring. They're not necessarily depressed. They're just bored. Am I being unkind?
I don't know. I think because at some point there was a shift, right, where people were trying to make us understand that depression is a real thing.
Mm.
And that it should be taken seriously. So maybe when that shift happened,
it went too far that way.
Well, I don't know if it went too far, but you know, it just got a lot more attention, and maybe that's what it is.
It's now a form of virtue signaling to constantly drone on about how depressed you are. You see it all over YouTube, these sniveling hug and confess videos made by privileged millennial brats who haven't had a proper day of hardship in their entire lives. They think they're being edgy, when in fact they're engaging in just another form of basic bitchery.
You're a basic bitch.
Social media has created a generation of young people suffering from narcissistic personality disorder. They try to one-up each other for depression brownie points with endless blubber fests about their poor privileged lives. Meanwhile, people living in African mud huts literally give zero fucks. Maladjustment is now trendy. And not in a kind of Morrissey, emo, grunge-esque, chic kind of way.
And heaven knows I'm miserable now.
We've always had that. I'm talking about this ridiculous idea that we've been forced to swallow, that constantly admitting weakness is a strength. It isn't. Strength of mind is strength. Being constantly brushed off course by the slightest breeze and then having a whining fit about it isn't. They've transformed being anemic, weak-minded, and easily upset into a positive personality trait. This idea that we should all have permanent emotional incontinence. This idea that if we're not constantly sharing the latest chapter in our contrived mental breakdown for all the world to see, that we're somehow cold or inhuman. That's total BS.
Bullshit.
Strength of character used to be about the ability to deal with negative stuff without just falling to pieces at the first sign of distress. Now look what they've turned us into. Simpering pussies wallowing in our own misfortune whenever every tiny thing doesn't go our way.
Oh. You know, a lot of this, I've got to say, a lot of this is just spot on.
Yeah, out of all his rants, this one's actually pretty good.
Yeah, usually he's political, so this was a welcome relief. But you do meet those people who feel they need to share every misery and every breakdown and every negative turn in their lives. And you know, these days, that's what talk shows are all about. So people see celebrities doing it and they go, oh, I better be like that too.
But don't you think, obviously this is maybe a bit harsh, but in the absence of praise, people then seek sympathy. So you don't do anything strong enough in life to get like the well done. So they'd rather look for the aw shame.
Spot on. It's what it is.
In my experience, the people that I know in my circle who do suffer from depression rarely admit it.
That's another good point.
They don't actually talk about it.
Actual cases, yeah.
Very good point. All right, let's leave this alone as well. We've got too much to do.
We've got too much to do
today than to worry about, you know, it's too much. I don't have time. Sorry, Chloe, there isn't time. So we're going to have to get into news headlines with Mabane. That's right now. We're going to check in on some of those stories. We'll get to Ben with the sport. We'll get to Anz here with the money. And then we've got Tulani coming in. We've got some news stories to get to. We'll talk about this Gupta lawyer I saw on TV. Please remind me. Some white Afrikaans dude who's representing the Guptas, basically saying there's a huge conspiracy against them.
Oh, but I mean, he's just doing his job.
You can't believe this, what some people will do for money.
It's his job, Gareth.
I know. And then I've got a list of things that are a problem for Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma if she is going to be president.
Ooh.
That she's got to deal with. Adrian Basson wrote a very interesting article. We're going to try and get him in tomorrow because justice isn't here yet. And Adrian Basson wrote this really interesting article about the problems that Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma will face if she does run against Cyril. And questions that need to be resolved. So all of that and more on the way. But first, let's get into the headlines. Here's Mabale Moloi, the news headlines brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria.
Well, you talk about the problems that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma could potentially face. The ANC stalwarts have announced that they will be meeting with the ANC's top six next week. The point of this meeting is basically to assess the state of the organization. The stalwarts say that while members of the ANC must have the final say on who should lead the organization, an urgent discussion is needed around the values and principles that potential leaders must see to.
You don't say.
So meetings all around for the ANC organization. Now, are you one of the people who obtained your driver's license through nefarious ways? A bit of bribery, a bit of corruption, a bit of...
I can vouch for Sia, he got his legitimately.
Can I always say that it was your pressure, actually? Because after I failed once, I was like, oh, Lord. No.
Oh, you only failed once?
Just
once.
I failed.
I failed like three times. But yeah, I also got mine legitimately. Well, the reason that I ask you this question is because our transport minister, Dipuo Peters, she has issued a stern warning to motorists who bought their driver's licenses, saying that they may be called for re-evaluation or they may even lose their licenses.
Oh, no.
The minister made this announcement on the back of the road death toll that was released for the festive season, which stands at over 1,700 people. That we lost on the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this translates to a 5% increase when compared to the period the year before. And one of the reasons that the minister has blamed for this is the corruption that we find at licensing centers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to be, you know, evaluating a couple of these licensing centers that have been recognized to display the most corruption. And if you bought your license there, you know, you might have to answer a few questions. I mean, I don't know how they're really going to pinpoint and track you down.
Oh, they'll find you.
But they,
all these roadblocks. Let me tell you something. I have never seen so many police, metro police around as I did over Christmas. Did you see them? Mabs, you were in Joburg.
Yeah, that's when they come out in full force.
Oh, they were everywhere. Yeah. Shows you that we've got a massive metro police force because you don't see them the rest of the year.
What are they doing the rest of the
year? Yeah, who knows? But when they have these roadblocks, they must be able to pull people out and check if their licenses are real.
Huh. There were tons by the coast as well, just like by the beach, everywhere. So, hey, at least they're keeping us safe. That's a little silver lining.
Yeah. The controversy surrounding whether Russia, you know, helped President-elect Donald Trump clinch his election through hacking and all sorts of other allegations, that conversation still continues, with the FBI Director James Comey now releasing statements saying that Russia hacked into Republican state political campaigns and old email domains of the Republican National Committee. But according to the FBI Director, there is no evidence that Russia successfully penetrated President-elect Donald Trump's campaign. Yeah, suit you.
Penetrated.
Mm. This is after U.S. intelligence agencies last week released an assessment that Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered a covert effort to help Trump win the election. So
I'm really rich. Yeah, I'll show you that in a second.
Yep, that too. That too, Trump. That too. So that conversation is ongoing. And then finally, Gareth, Morocco have decided that they're going to ban the import, production, and sale of burqas.
Oh.
Authorities say that they're doing away with the full face covering garments worn by some Muslim women for security reasons.
That's a good one.
The official line is that bandits have repeatedly used the full veil garments to perpetrate their crimes. And so authorities have now decided that they're going to be doing away with the importing and production and the sale of birdcage.
I've said for the longest time, this is the biggest problem I have with it. I'm obviously sympathetic to all those women who are stuck under burqas. And a lot of them think that it's their choice, even though they've been put in them since they were age 9 or whatever. And I think that's bullshit. Stockholm syndrome is what you call that. But the real problem with these burqas is you can't see who you're talking to. You don't know if it's not.
It could Fatima.
Be, it could be Caitlyn Jenner. You have no idea. I want to see your face. It's a basic principle of human communication that you need to be able to read the other person's body language. Now, how can you do that? You can't see a goddamn thing. Right?
The Interior Minister says that they're going to be making the official announcement of the burqa sometime this week. But I don't know what this means for Muslim women in that country, though. Are they now going to be forced to not wear them, is what I'm not understanding.
You can't force anyone to not wear something. Yeah. You can't force anyone to wear something. I mean, this is 2017, please. But at the same time, I don't think if you don't make burqas available, if you don't sell them anywhere, people can't wear them. And they have to sit at home and knit them themselves.
And they shall.
Oh, some people will.
And
you
they
watch,
shall.
Though. You watch some
yeah,
of those.
I mean, somebody, you know, somebody might be sitting at home who'll find a gap in making burqas.
No. Sell them in the back street.
Boosting the economy.
And sell them from their home, you know.
Boosting the economy.
You can't stop these things.
Right. Okay, so George Michael News. Mm-hmm. Apparently, George Michael tried to call time on his relationship with his boyfriend, Fadi Fawaz.
Uh-oh.
This was before.
I love that name, honestly. It sounds like something you could order. May I have a Fadi Fawaz, please?
I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Like two Fadi Fawazes and a side of cream.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, remember I told you earlier this week that authorities are now investigating the possibility that George Michael overdosed. And so it has now recently emerged from a family member of George Michael that he was in fact trying to end his relationship with his longtime boyfriend before his tragic death.
He did end the relationship.
Well, he did end the relationship. Fadi Fawaz, a few days after George Michael was found dead, tweeted and then deleted the tweets that George Michael had in fact been suicidal.
Uh-oh.
So this story, you know, maybe not as straightforward as we initially thought.
See, because now they're trying to say that Fadi possibly had something to do with George's death. Uh-oh. Then now, it's becoming like a little drama written.
Especially if there's money at hand. Like, if George were to die and you find out that Fadi Falafel
Fawaz
is now a billionaire, then yes, skullduggery.
Were they married, though? They were married.
I don't think they were married, no.
My ass is, whoa, the fuck out.
Okay, all right.
Calm down, Fadi.
Well, it was also that, yeah.
That was Fadi, by the way.
Yeah.
That's all he has to say. All right, that's the news. Let's get into some sport with Ben. Don't forget, in a short while, we'll check in with Anthony. I see a couple of messages here from Anushka, wants to know about hashtag invest. We'll talk to Anthony about that. And Avi says, Obama, great speaker, great family, a president that could finally be respected in the U.S. again. But let's not exonerate him from the highest U.S.
Bless you.
Sure.
Where did that come from? Let's not exonerate him from the highest U.S. debt levels of all time, the highest medical costs of all time, college costs too, attacked Libya without congressional approval, 25,000 bombs dropped on Iraq and Syria in 2016, grand total of zero hitting ISIS oil fields. So, yeah, you know, they're going to be, and those are all very good points, Avi. I just think no president's going to be perfect. This guy did a fine enough job for me to be able to say, you know what, go on your way. Thank you for your time in the office.
Yeah.
And he's not even my president. I wish I could say that about my president.
800 and 700. Listen properly. 769,800.
Okay, let's get into Ben's sport this morning. What do you got for us, Ben?
Well, Gareth, AFCON.
Yes.
You excited about that?
About as excited as I am about the 43,000 new teams that will be in the World Cup. Well, yeah, let's get to that in a sec. But AFCON, there's 3 days to go, the first match.
But we're not in it.
I know, Gareth, but Africa's teams are in it. All of them. Except for us.
What do I know about Guinea-Bissau?
Well, I can tell you about Guinea-Bissau. They will be playing the first match. And that'll be on Saturday, 14th of Jan. And they'll be taking on host Gabon. And they'll be at 6 o'clock. But look today at Group B. Now, Group B, there's always a group of death. People love saying that because it makes it sound dramatic and
yes,
really
I heard you going through Group A yesterday. So let's look at Group B.
So Group B has got Algeria. Now, they've got Mahrez. Now, Mahrez was the guy who was the hero of Leicester. So he's in there, big name guy. And then, so Algeria, Senegal, Tunisia, and Zimbabwe. Now, I'll tell you why this is the group of death. Because if you go to the world rankings, Tunisia's 35th, Algeria's 38th, and Senegal's 33rd. So that is pretty much your toughest group. So poor old Zimbabwe, the only team from Southern Africa, they're in the hardest group possible.
Well, they've also got the hardest possible political future with Bob Mugabe hanging on there. So yeah.
Pretty much. Tough times. But yeah, let's get to the big story then. So FIFA officially are all behind 48 teams for the World Cup, right? So mixed reviews. Now, when you think 48 teams, that's up from 32. Which means that Africa perhaps can have as much as 9 teams, which is up from around 5. So when you look at it from that perspective, Gianni Infantino, who based his entire campaign about the fact that he's bringing football to the world, he's going to be less dodgy, all these kind of things. His whole campaign was built around this whole 48-team expansion thing. All good and well. Asia will get more teams. Everyone wins. Because all he says is like, football is more about, it's more to football than Europe and South America. Cool, that's great. If you're not from those emerging nations, they're all telling him to piss off, basically. They said this is an absolute disaster. You talk to a German person about this 48-team World Cup. They're all just screaming bullshit. Like, how dare you do this? You're ruining a good thing. So, mixed reviews in the purest sense here. But that'll take place in the 2026 World Cup, which, from what I understand, is still up for purchase. Bid process.
Yes! So
yeah, interesting times. They have 48 teams. So what it breaks down is that people were originally saying, well, we can't have 48 teams. It'll just be a never-ending tournament. And we can't have this because rich teams in Europe can't put their players out for that long. Well, it's going to be 80 matches instead of 64 matches. And if you do win the thing, you'll still only play 7 matches. So basically, the new guys will play an extra game in the beginning to get to a certain phase where they can play against the big teams. There'll be 16 groups, 3 teams per group.
All right.
Yeah. So basically, that's what it comes down to.
So World Cup will last about 6 months.
Well, 32 days, Gareth. So the time frame is actually staying the same.
Okay.
Yeah. But there again, the big thing. Africa can go from having 5 teams to as much as 9 teams, although that hasn't been confirmed. Of course, Europe will want more teams too.
Shouldn't we then be in favor of this?
Can you imagine?
Because we've got such a shitty national
football
team.
It's 48 teams, but Bafana still can't qualify. That'll be the most humiliating and just difficult thing to stomach.
I totally agree, but you know that's going to happen.
How much longer could the World Cup possibly be with an extra... What's the maths here? What's 48 minus 32?
No, as Ben says, it'll still be a month.
Will it?
Yeah. It's been condensed and manipulated and sort of contorted in certain
ways. So what'll happen is you won't be able to watch every match.
I didn't watch every match to begin with.
Well, Sima Bali said nothing's lost on you.
I feel like I'm missing something.
Speaking of football, it appears that they're really looking to tackle the whole thing of gay players coming out and doing so with dignity. So
they don't like that? They want them to come out with less dignity?
England's FA chairman, Greg Clark, was basically very outspoken last year saying that it's very difficult to be gay in football because if you were to come out, well, your life will be a disaster.
Ooh.
Okay, he didn't use those words, he basically meant that. So what he's saying is that he's been in talks with gay sports people. He's gone on a real crusade here, his old Greg. And he believes that what they should do is they should all come out together at the start of the season when it's summer. I'm not making this up. When it's summer and everyone's happy and the sun's shining.
Let's all come out together
and then it won't be so bad. Because if they come out one by one,
they'll be
victimized terribly. So there's two things about this as well. Greg, very big of you, Greg, to do this because he started off by sounding like a massive homophobe. Mm. But it is kind of tough because you know there's so many bigots and there's people with their agendas.
Yeah.
And just imagine that you're a footballer, right, and you're on the transfer market and your value is, say, 30 million euros. And then suddenly you get a few bigoted clubs, people who own these huge clubs, and they go, no, we don't want a gay guy. So
but
suddenly
if all the gay soccer players all come out at the same time, there'll be no one to play soccer. Surely? There's so many gay soccer players. There are a lot.
How do you know this, Gareth?
We know that because
What do you know?
Because they're playing soccer.
No, you would more likely say that about rugby players, you know, who enjoy pushing their faces in each other's backsides, rather.
No, they don't.
Soccer players aren't that intimate when it comes to contact.
Of course they are. They're kissing each other after every goal and hugging.
No, I just
but
don't
that
want
doesn't
to.
Make you gay. Kissing another man does not make you gay.
Oh, true. Okay.
As long as it's on the sports field and as long as he's done something good prior to the kiss.
There we go.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to fit the stereotype here, but I'm seeing a full-on production then at the beginning of every season.
You need a musical, a football musical.
Diana Ross, I'm coming out, playing. Yes. Confetti, balloon.
Everybody, you go, a spectacular. It must be like the Rio Carnival.
On a serious note, though, what are these people still afraid of when it comes to a gay athlete? What are they still terrified of?
It goes back to our old argument. Straight people are obsessed with the fact that, like, gays will obviously want and then try to burn them in the showers. Yeah. Because every gay guy obviously wants every straight guy.
Honestly.
As Ben already mentioned, there are a lot of bigoted football club owners and shareholders. You know, there's some very old school kind of backward thinking in the world. There really is. There's a lot of that going on. So if you're a gay footballer, I suppose you won't get the money that you deserve or you won't get the club selection that you want. There's a lot that can go wrong.
Look, I'm sad to say, but there's still, to this day, there's people who throw bananas at African players who are playing in European leagues.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think that kind of mindset, how can someone like that even comprehend, I don't know, homosexuality being so broadcast like that? Can you imagine what they would do then? They'd be probably throwing dildos at him or something.
Yeah.
People are horrible like this.
Right.
And, you know, when they get the pack mentality, which football's all about, it gets even worse. Anyway, on to golf, and Rory McIlroy is already drawing a huge crowd. This guy is such a big deal. As I was saying to you yesterday, it is so incredible that he's here. No. I'd like to go today. But if you look at the rain, Friday it'll be pissing down. Same for Saturday, a little bit on Sunday. So if you are going to go watch him, pack the water clothing. It'll be well worth it, though. Now, Rory, when he got to this country, he went and did a little bit of game drives and that kind of stuff. He arrived yesterday to basically go play a bit of golf on a pro-am, which no one goes to. There was a massive crowd following him around during the pro-am.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine who was actually inside the ropes for the week, he sent me this picture. I put it on Instagram. It had more than 100 likes. I never have more than 100 likes. That's how amazing this is. It's hardly a scale for greater things, but that said, my biggest Instagram picture was just Rory McIlroy being at Glendower.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, what a great guy. So he is, of course, one of the big favorites. The rough's been cut down a little bit, but the course is still very wet and soft. So the scoring is going to be rather low this week. And, definitely favors some of the big hitters. But I would still say that Brandon Stone has got to be your money favorite for that one. He's put a lot of work in over the festive season. He is the defending champ, and he won the Alfred Daniel Championship at Leopard Creek. So he's very much your money man.
All right. There's some. Is that the sport?
Pretty much, Gareth. I've got a couple of other stories I'd like to get to after the break. Oh, sorry, in the XR.
There's a picture of Mabali and Ben and Sia and I on Facebook and Twitter if you want to see it. When we went to school for the first time.
Yeah.
Our back to school pictures, because today is back to school day. So we put up all our pictures of all of us.
Oh, my goodness.
The cuteness, man.
Wow. Really? Are you all... Who are you talking about?
No, we were...
Let's not go down
We were still
road.
Young and innocent, you
Don't
know?
Take a look.
Do you know what the funny thing is?
Now we're just, like, gross.
The people at the office, like, called me yesterday and they said, Sia, send us a picture of when you were in school.
Sia, you were cute.
But I sent them a picture from when I was in high school. They're like, no, Sia, you still look the same. We need something different.
Well, Sia, it was
so only, I really had to go young.
It was only 3 years ago.
Sia, how old are you in this picture here?
This was actually grade one.
I was seven years old.
This is so funny. Gareth looks 33.
Are you kidding?
He does. He's got this pose like an old man. Like, yes, what do you want with me?
Wow.
Well, Mubs looks very
How
cute.
How old were you
Mubs
guys
has there? Got little pigtails.
Yeah, I did.
How old were you, Mabel?
I must have also been... I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't know how old I was.
I have a terrible memory. That's my problem.
I was in grade two, so what would that be?
You were like eight, maybe. Yeah,
about seven, eight.
Ben, how old are you?
In this picture, I think I was 14.
So I
was quite considerate. I sent a few pictures from very young to that one, and obviously Dory thought that was the best.
All right, there it is. You can go and check that out on Twitter. I just retweeted it as well. And you know what? Send us yours, especially if they're embarrassing. Let's get into the money with Anthea and see what's going on there. It's very important for us to check in on what's happening to our money. And I know Anushka's got a question for Anthea. So let's go straight to it. Hey, Anthea, good morning.
Good morning, Gareth.
First of all, yesterday, not a bad day on the markets.
Oh, particularly good day, actually. Oh. The market was up over 1.5%. And we had our first more than $1 billion trading day for the year, which is fantastic.
Yeah. All right.
So it looks like people are back with a positive sentiment, which is great. Mining shares were absolutely on fire yesterday. I'm not sure why. Anglo was up over 7%, Billiton 4%. And I know that copper and iron ore spot prices had a bit of a rally, but those kind of moves in Anglo are exceptional. That was no good reason, right? The Rand was relatively stable. Well, no news. I mean, it's a good company, fair enough, but why would it move so much in one day without any news? That's my question.
Right.
I mean, and then, as I say, the Rand was relatively stable yesterday. You haven't heard me say that for a while, have you?
No.
In fact, I read a comment last night that said that the Turkish lira has now replaced the Rand as the world's most volatile currency. Now, I'm not sure if the commentator was just saying that it felt like it because, or if it is actually mathematically true, because when we talk about volatility, it does tend to be quite an emotive word. But actually, volatility, it's a simple mathematical equation. In fact, I've got it on my to-do list today. I really want to go and check if mathematically the Turkish lira is now the most volatile currency in the world. I know it's the worst performing currency so far this year. Although by the time I get to check, it might have changed because the Rand, because the Rand is having a bit of a blowout this morning.
Uh-oh.
It's now trading 13.76, so compared, which is a bit lower than last night's 13.65 close, and quite a bit lower than last week's 13.50 to the dollar.
Right.
And I'm not sure why. There's really no explanation. The dollar's been quite strong. But you know, this currency, just when you think it's stable, it becomes volatile again. Back to shares, financials and industrials also caught a bid yesterday. Richemont completely shot the lights out. It was up almost 5% yesterday. They're putting out a trading statement on Thursday, tomorrow. And it looks like traders are fairly positive on the share. I must say, I'm very relieved. It's that share, where I almost went against my investment philosophy. I added it to the portfolios at the end of last year, knowing that there's a potential good turnaround story, but very worried that I might have been buying into it too soon.
Okay.
So hopefully the share will reward me for my confidence in the management team. And then a share that is the converse of that, one where I'm, actually sitting waiting for good fundamental proof that it is a turnaround story. Oh, excuse me. is MTN. And there, I'm waiting, but actually, in the last month, why are we laughing at me?
We're not.
we're listening to the important information you're giving us. We're not making fun of your coughing and snorting.
Oh, thanks.
So you're saying when it comes to MTN?
When it comes to MTN, the share is up almost 20% in the last month. And also no news there. And I know that we're expecting some sort of turnaround. We're expecting great things from the new CEO. But he only starts, I think, June of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So why the shares rallied is a bit... I'm worried. I don't want to miss out on it, but I don't want to get into it too soon because it more than Richemont, you know, it's got exposure to Nigeria, and all we need is for this oil price to come off a bit more, and then you'll see a turnaround in fortune of this share.
All right.
And then a share that bucked the trend yesterday was Woolworths. It was down 4%. Again, no news. So big movements in the stock market on no particular news flow. We're expecting a trading update from them today, although that hasn't been confirmed yet. And there's a lot of concern about local retailers. Apparently, Black Friday was exceptional for sales. But there's a lot of speculation that after Black Friday, sales just basically dropped off a cliff. And, of course, now they're implementing January sales. And so even if they do manage to pull shoppers in, most of the sales that they have done through December and January will be at reduced prices. So volumes need to be so much higher than kind of where they were last year, just for them to keep up the momentum of sales growth. But we wait and see. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question from Anushka here? She says, hey, Gareth, I opened my invest account yesterday, #invest, through the link on Anthea's page. Easy Equities helped me FICA the account. What now? Do I just deposit the money? Will Anthea's team manage and purchase shares accordingly? I want to invest in both the aggressive and moderate portfolios. So what do I do?
Okay, so now you have to go to the drop-down menu or the drop-down menu that says your account, go to deposit, and then add money to your account. So you can either do that by bank transfer or you can use your credit card. Once that goes through, you go to the invest drop-down tab and you search for basket and bundles. And under the bundles tab, you'll find the #investportfolios. And then you just click on the one you want to invest in, and from there it's fairly simple.
Very good. And obviously, if we have any questions or anybody's confused, they can just email you.
Yes, please, at invest@cartesian.co.za.
invest@cartesian.co.za. Thank you, Anthea.
My pleasure. Thanks, cool. Gareth.
There we go. Anthea Gardner, a quick look at the markets for this morning. And don't forget, if you haven't got into #invest, this might be exactly the right time to do it. Do it, open a portfolio up for your kids. It might just end up paying for their university one day. Open up a portfolio for, you know, an aunt or an uncle so that you don't have to look after them. They can start putting in, you know, you put in $100 a month. You'll be surprised at how quickly that can grow. And we're obviously not guaranteeing any performance here because you never know with the stock market, but it's certainly... If you compare the stock market to what bank interest rates have given to people and what other kinds of places that you can put your money do, this is probably one of the better bets. And, of course, it's being managed by Anthea as a proper asset manager, so you can get the information that you need right here on the show every day and monitor your ups and downs on the stock market. And really, so far for January, it's looking pretty damn good for everybody. So get in before you miss out. That's the general idea. And you're never too young to invest, by the way. In fact, the earlier you start, I was telling my sister this the other day, the earlier you start, the better. Then you've got more time in there you can gather and generate a lot more compounded interest. That's just how it works. That's how it makes sense. Okay, let's get cracking. We've got a hell of a morning ahead of us. We've got Thulani Khadebe coming in a little bit later on. We're checking in some news with Mubs. It's a game of F, Marry, Kill, if we have time for that. And the reasons why Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma has problems if she does run for the leadership of the ANC. So all of that and more on the way.
This is CliffCentral.com.